Blog Talk Radio.
My name is Raina Starr. Dorian Wallace has the afternoon off. I'm very excited about this afternoon's guest, but before we bring her on, Desperate House Witches is not a GPG or even an R-rated show. So if bad language, dirty talk, bodily functions, or any other crass thing that might come out of my mouth might offend you, this may not be the show for you. But I'll try to keep it down to a dull roar. We also would like to thank our sponsor, the amazing, the wonderful, the Wicked One herself, the incredible Dorothy Morrison, Wicked Witch Studios. So check out www.wickedwitchstudios.com. And if you need her products shipped overseas, check out theangrycauldron.com. And don't forget, in May, the re-release of Dorothy's book, Utterly Wicked. We are looking forward to it, and we're going to have a little party on the air for it. So, without further ado, I'm very excited to speak to my guest this afternoon, Diotima Mantinea, author of the newest book, Touch the Earth, Kiss the Sky. Hello, my dear.
Hello, Raina.
How are you?
I'm great. I had my book launch party last night up at Asheville Raven and Crone, and we had a grand old time, and I got a good night's sleep last night, so I'm running on all cylinders this morning, this afternoon, I guess. Yeah, it is afternoon, isn't it?
Yeah, well, you know, speaking of all cylinders, I got online this morning at 6 a.m. to go food shopping at our local store, and I don't know what you guys are experiencing, but when they opened the door, there was a mad rush on toilet paper, and I was furious because I took one package, and the woman behind me takes the big arm sweep and starts dumping everything into her basket. So I turned around and I looked at her like, I know, what is wrong with people? I looked at her like, have you lost your damn mind? And you know, when she was looking at me, other people behind her started grabbing some toilet paper. Not all of it, just one package apiece. So I was, you know, distracting her a little bit so other people would have a shot. But I'm telling you, after 25 minutes in the store, almost all the shelves were empty. And it wasn't just toilet paper. It was, there's no produce, there's no meat, there's no bread, there's no dairy, there's nothing. It's insane.
Yeah, we're seeing something like that here, too. But the toilet paper seemed to go first everywhere. And since this isn't a PG-rated show, I will just note, clearly some people are really full of shit.
Yeah, and, you know, and I mentioned this on Facebook, and I'm like, if you need that much fucking toilet paper, your ass is nasty and you need to go take a bath. There's no other way around it. I mean, but people are hoarding toilet paper. Yeah, I never, all I can think of is, you know, if you're going to be quarantined for 2 weeks and you have a family, say, of four people, and, you know, you're not, I guess folks are thinking, quarantine means you are locked in a room and you cannot, like, open the door or breathe the air or anything, and it's like being in jail, and they want to make sure they have enough toilet paper for their sentence. But it's only 2 weeks. I mean, you know, the quarantine when it happens, and honestly, I'm not even sure you know more about Earth and science, which is why I think it's especially fortuitous that you're on today. Because you've done research into, you know, the actual earth and, you know, soil and all of these things. So you would have a much better understanding of what's happening, certainly, than I do. I mean, do you think the situation is man-made? Is it an earth rejection of humans? What do you think is actually happening?
I don't know, and I don't think anyone really does. I think we all have certain ideas. I think we all have certain ideas about it. You know, we certainly know that governments work on bioweapons, so this concept that it could be some escaped virus is not totally out of the realm of possibility. But we also know that, you know, viruses have been doing this for thousands of years, and I might note that humans have lived without toilet paper for all but about the last 150 years, so we could do that again. But living without food, that we'd have a problem with.
That's true. That is very true.
I think the toilet paper thing is almost like having a good wood, you know, a good wood pile ready for the winter. It just somehow gives people a sense of security or something, you know, because it doesn't really make that much sense otherwise. It's certainly possible to clean up after our eliminative functions without a lot of paper because, you know, Lord, we did it for thousands of years.
I'm not sure
what's going on.
Yeah, and, you know, and speaking to the fact that we didn't always have, you know, toilet paper, when I lived on a farm in the Appalachian Mountains for a year, we didn't have, I mean, we had toilet paper, but there was a lot of composting going on, and I learned a lot about that. And, you know, there's things that can be done with excrement, as it were. But, okay.
Exactly.
Yeah, I just find it very freaky that, you know, if you had told me at this point last week that we would be at this point this week, I would have laughed.
Well, this is what exponential growth does. Really, the virus is increasing, the infection is seems to be increasing exponentially, literally exponentially. And that means that things can change in what seems like overnight, and I know that happened in Italy, and it could happen here. That's why it's so important to try and flatten the curve, to actually try and isolate ourselves as much as possible so that we can minimize the infection and minimize the load on medical hospitals and doctors and nurses and medical equipment and all of that.
Mm-hmm. I've heard a lot about flattening the curve lately. Can you explain that to the folks listening, what that means?
Sure, absolutely. In the normal course of an infection with something highly infectious like this, a lot of people get sick in a very short time. And so what you see, if you were to graph it out, what you see is like this big mountain. Goes way up and then comes way down. What we're trying to do is bring that curve down, to flatten that mountain out, so it's less like the Rockies and more like the Appalachians. And because what that translates to is, even if you may have, say, the same number of people getting sick over time, it doesn't happen all at once, which means that hospital beds don't get overfilled, which means that ventilators are available for those who need it, which means fewer people die. I mean, in Italy, from what I understood, they were treating people on the floor. They were having to make triage decisions. You would usually only have to make in wartime. Who lives? Who dies? Who gets on the ventilator? Both of these people will die if they don't get on the ventilator. We only have one ventilator. Who are we going to put on it? That's what flattening the curve is all about. It's trying to slow down the rate of infection so that the infrastructure, the health infrastructure of the country, is not overwhelmed all at once.
Wow. And you know what that reminds me of? That reminds me of when they were saying, you know, there was this rumor that there would be death panels, who would live and who would die, when they were trying to destroy Obamacare. And mm-hmm. I find it really interesting that it's happening. It's happening somewhere in the world in real time, like that. Those decisions are being
made. Well, it's
made
certainly darkly. It's certainly darkly ironic. But I mean,
this is the kind of decision
that has to be made. You know, these are the kinds of decisions that normally would have to be made on a battlefield, when people are getting shot and killed, you know, all around you, and you can only save so many. You know, you can save this person, and maybe you could save this person, but you're sure you can save that person, so you go to and you save that person. We shouldn't have to do that with an infectious disease, and we won't have to do that if we are all very, very careful about spreading it. The fact that, you know, someone may be 20 years old and in the prime of health and not really care if they get sick, because they'll probably shake it off really quickly, even if they do. Well, the incubation period for this particular virus is 2 days to 2 weeks, which means that this apparently healthy young person could be wandering around infected and spreading the infection and not even be symptomatic. So they don't know they're spreading the infection, but they could be spreading it to people who are immunocompromised, to people who are elderly, and, you know, they may think it's fine to go out and be in the world, but it's not. That's why all of us have to be very, very careful about the amount of, you know, contact we have and the number of crowds that we're in. I was very sorry and sad, because, you know, I know so many of us were looking forward to things that have gotten canceled. I was really looking forward to being at Between the World Sacred Space, which was a conference that was happening in Maryland in April, and I was supposed mm-hmm. to be presenting there, and they have had to reschedule it for April of next year, and we're all going to be,
wow.
and that was the responsible thing to do. You know, that was absolutely the responsible thing to do. And we all have to be mm-hmm. responsible, not just for our own health, but for each other's health as well.
True.
We can't think that just because we're healthy, we can go around shaking hands and hugging people, because we don't know if we're healthy or not. And even if we aren't worried about getting terribly ill from this particular virus, there are people who could get ill and die from it, and we have to make sure that we're not carrying it around, that we're not spreading it.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm concerned because, especially in our state, well, in every state, you know, you have to be so symptomatic for them to even consider testing you. And I think at the point that you're already being tested is almost too late, isn't it?
Absolutely. If you're being tested, you're symptomatic, which means that you were asymptomatic for at least 2 days, possibly 2 weeks, but still carrying the virus and able to spread it around.
That's remarkable.
Yeah, I mean it's just a real change in the way things are in our civilization. I wrote about this in my 2020 blog post. Mm-hmm. About how many things were going to change and how much fear there was going to be and how structures of civilizations were literally going to be changing and breaking down and maybe not being rebuilt. You know, as Byron Ballard says, it's tower time, and structures are falling down all around. And that's one of the reasons that, you know, that tower time seems such an appropriate name, because it really is. I mean, the astrology backs this up. It really is about structures breaking down and needing to be rebuilt. So, you know, these are the times we were made for, and we have to step up and take on what I believe we agreed to before we jumped off the cloud. You know, I don't think any soul is born unwilling.
Right.
I think they come in willing to take on the times that they were born into, and knowing that it might be difficult, knowing that it might, you know, even be extremely difficult. But, you know, that's kind of the way we're built. I mean, look at people like, oh, I don't know, race car drivers and bungee jumpers and people who, you know, rappel up mountains. I mean, they put their bodies, their health, their very lives on the line all the time. And so, you know,
yeah.
I don't think it at all unusual that a soul would feel the same need to check it out, to see what they could do, to see how well they could manage within this limited reality of time and space.
Yeah. That's interesting. I did not think about that. You know, it's in the day-to-day you get very reactive to what's
Absolutely.
Going on and the information as it's presented. So, you know, a lot of people tend to disconnect from their spirituality when they're in a difficult situation like this. And when it's something global, as this is, you know, a lot of folks in the day-to-day, you know, we're so busy trying to figure out the correct way to move about and how to take care of ourselves and our families, that we actually disconnect from that spiritual side. And it's really fortuitous, again, that I have you on today and that we have this amazing book to talk about. So let me ask you, you know, we're talking about the spiritual side. Was this book something that you knew you had to write at a particular time? Did you foresee this in this degree?
Well, as an astrologer, you know, yes, saw this kind of breakdown in our civilization as someone who studied agronomy and soil science and ecology in college and grad school. I know that we are living unsustainably on this earth. So none of this is a
mm-hmm.
surprise, but actually I really began writing the book when my mentors, my spiritual guides, let's put it that way, both physical and non-physical, started prodding me to do it. And it wasn't actually until about 2 years ago when I sent off three chapters and an outline to Llewellyn and said, hey, are you interested? And they, you know, said, yeah. So then I finished writing it. And it wasn't until I was sure that I had interest that I actually finished writing it. But these are ideas that I've been expressing in my blog posts for many years, but I've been wrestling with and refining and for decades, really. And speaking to what you were saying about how easy it is to lose our spirituality in a time like this, that's one of the reasons
mm-hmm.
I structured the book around the stations of the sun. Now, you and
mm-hmm.
I think you're Wiccan, aren't you?
I am. I'm Gardnerian.
Okay. So, you know, you and I would call these the Sabbats. But they, you know, and although our, you know, our cross quarters are a little bit off from the midpoint between solstice and equinox and solstice, basically we have,
mm-hmm.
we're tracking the sun, you know, as in its apparent path through the sky during the year. And I think it's really important to have holy days, to have days that bring us back to spiritual realities, make us think about this again. Oh, every 6 weeks
mm-hmm.
or so would be good. So we don't lose
mm-hmm.
track, you know, during these times so that we can reconnect and remind ourselves that, oh yeah, right. You know, this is the time, these are the times we were born for. And we have to do the work that we agreed to do when we decided to come in. So that's one of the reasons that I structured the book around the stations of the sun. The other reason, of course, is that if you are highly skeptical of magic or spirituality because you feel like, well, you know, it's not rooted in the real world, it's not rooted in science, then this is something that is absolutely rooted in the real world and rooted in science. It's basic astronomy. You know, the sun travels, we travel around the sun every year, and we see it shifting its position in the sky, and astrologers watch as it moves through the signs during the year. And for us to take a moment at the solstices and the equinoxes and the midpoints between the solstices and the equinoxes, for us to take time during each year, maybe about every 6 weeks or so, to say, oh, things are changing. Yes, the seasons are changing. The general vibe is changing, and it's a wonderful opportunity, especially once you start learning to work with energy, to energetically realign yourself with the earth, to spend some time thinking about what's important to you, what your core values are, so that when you are hit, you know, from by something like this, you walk into the store, and instead of saying, fuck everybody else, I'm going to take all the toilet paper I can fit into my cart, you go, oh, I'm just going to take one or two packages of toilet paper because other people are going to need it too. Or I'm not going to stock up on masks because I know that, you know, the healthcare workers are going to need them. Because doing something spiritual every 6 weeks or so really helps to establish your core values very deep in your heart and your mind and your soul, so that when you react in an emergency, you tend to react more in line with those values than just with basic, oh my God, I could die. I've got to save myself here. Me. So I think those stations of the sun are really important.
I agree with that. And, you know, I find it very interesting that you reassess yourself when something like this happens. You have to actually think about who you are and how you react. And what I love about your, one of the things I love about your book, well, actually, this is a lot of the things I love about your book. Your book to me, and correct me if you think I am off track here, but for me, your book is about doing for the greater good by getting to your greater self. And there's a lot of what I consider self-care in the book and aligning yourself, not just as a Wiccan or a pagan, or it's like whatever path you're on, you've incorporated some of the things that I understand to be like a Buddhist attitude of, you know, the three cycle breath and the, you know, watching your movements and checking your reactions. And there's a lot of checking in with yourself, which I don't find a lot of talking about, but I think it's really important. But you do it in a way that is more than just giving lip service to this. What I get out of your book is that, No, this isn't something we just threw in here to say it's important to check in with yourself. This book, to me, centers around doing a continuous check-in with yourself.
Yes, absolutely. And the stations of the sun help with that. And it's really important. Self-care is absolutely important, but so is self-questioning. And one of the points I make in the book, too, is that we tend to beat ourselves up a lot. In most people's inner self-talk, especially if they've experienced trauma, most people's inner self-talk is poisonous. I mean, if you talk to someone else like that, they'd probably never speak to you again. And
That's true.
You know, if every time you start to think about something and start to question yourself, you start beating yourself up, then you know what? You're going to stop questioning yourself because it hurts too damn much. And it's important that we not stop questioning ourselves. it's important that we look within and come to understand that, you know, we're basically good bull. I mean, certainly anyone who's going to be reading that book is, you know, is likely to be someone who believes that there is something spiritual about this world and they want to explore it more. So it's important to realize, all right, I'm someone who's looking for growth. I am someone who at least sometimes cares about other people when I'm not terrified, you know. And so I'm going to, you know, if I've done something awful, if I've, you know, made a fool out of myself, or if someone has made a fool out of me, or if I've hurt someone that I love, instead of coming up, you know, constantly coming up with, well, it's not my fault, like certain politicians, you know, you look within yourself and you go, all right, I made a mistake. But that doesn't mean I'm a bad person. And all I really need to do is understand that mistake and why I made it, and then move on and figure out how I can live my life without making that same mistake again.
That was something in the book that when I read, okay, so you say in the book, and I'm paraphrasing obviously because I didn't memorize it, but what you said in the book was, just because you've been, well, I mean, it's a great book, so, you know,
don't be surprised
if people do. But the thing that hit me the clearest was, just because you've identified the issue, don't think that's the same thing as getting rid of the problem because of the imprinting that happens from childhood on. And I'm like,
exactly.
You know, because I was and it's, you know, and it's weird when I tell people I was an abused child, because I think 9 out of 10 times people have been abused as a child. It's, you know, we've all suffered some kind of trauma because our parents have carried their trauma with them. So how would it not affect us? You know what I mean? So,
absolutely.
But I love the way you worded it so beautifully. It's like, it, you know, good that you've put your hand on the issue, but it takes more than acknowledgement to get past it.
It does, and it takes more than thinking. I mean, thinking about it is important, and journaling about it is important, and all the mental work about it is important. But the reason I call it Touch the Earth, Kiss the Sky is because it's important to do the sky work, the thinking, the air, the all of the mental stuff. But it's also important to connect with the physical realm and do things in the physical realm as well. And that's why I think magic can be very, very helpful in healing childhood trauma, in helping us release some of that imprinting that is so difficult to reach through mental machinations alone.
Right. I agree. Because you can do the work, you know, with a therapist all day long, but you need a place to put that energy. And for people who do some kind of magic, I think it's easier because we know that that outlet is there and how to release the energy. And I just love the way you put it in the book, you know, with just grounding and breathing and, you know, the constant, you've got a constant sense of mindfulness about all action in the book. And it's really interesting. And I think especially now in a time like this, it's incredibly important to not just focus on the thinking about, well, what am I going to do and how am I going to react? It's also about, you know, keeping yourself somewhat clear to be able to look past yourself to help the greater good, which I thought was phenomenal.
And it also involves nurturing the observer within you. Those people behind the woman who scooped all the toilet paper off the shelf you mentioned earlier, they may not have planned to do that, but they saw her do that, and that ignited some primal fear in them, and so they just went ahead and scooped it too without observing themselves, without thinking about what they were doing. So, you know, the mental part is important too, to be able to step back and look and say, wait a minute, do I really need 120 rolls of toilet paper to get me through 2 weeks? Maybe I need to go to the doctor now if that's the case.
Right.
And people who, you know, people who just react instead of act have a lot more problems in their lives. And I think that's one of the things that magic helps us with. It helps us learn to observe, and it helps us learn to choose certain actions instead of just reacting, which doesn't mean we don't react. You know, we don't totally give up the lizard brain that says, oh my God, she's taking all the toilet paper. Maybe I'm going to need some too. But, you know, we can use our higher mind to say, well, no, actually you don't need that. And let's look at what's really going on here. Let's look a little bit deeper into ourselves, into our psyche, and also into real life. I mean, what is the reality of the situation? So many people tend to totally panic, totally react, instead of sitting down and saying, all right, what's the reality of the situation here? I'm going to get sick and die. No, you're not. I mean, the likelihood, maybe you are, who knows? Maybe you are. First of all, if you do you have some idea about what do you believe about death? Because so many of us are terribly fearful of things that we don't know anything about. I mean, I personally believe that death is a doorway into another realm of consciousness, which is where we came from, and I'm really not scared of it at all. I mean, I have a bit of trepidation about how I get from healthy and alive to dead, because, you know, I'm not really keen on like suffocating in my own lung fluids, you know, from something like that. But still, if that's the way I go out, then that's the way I go out. But I don't worry about what's on the other side, because I have given a lot of thought and research and personal spiritual reconnaissance to this concept of death. And so I don't fear it. And so it doesn't tend to bring up the same primal, you know, the thought of dying from COVID-19 does perhaps not bring up the same terror in me that it does in people who are scooping toilet paper off the shelves in large numbers.
Right.
And I think it's important to think about what we believe, to think about what our values are, and then to figure out what it feels like to put them into practice, so that when we come across emergency situations, we have our personal inner observer in place that allows us to step back and go, nope, wait a minute, this feeling of panic that you're sensing doesn't make sense. Now think about it for a minute. And remember what you have felt, what you have experienced in ritual, what you have experienced in meditation. Think about this and just step back for a minute. And when you do this regularly, when you do this kind of spiritual practice regularly, like at least every 6 weeks, if not daily, then that whole process of thinking through things happens in seconds. Because you have imprinted it.
You have a place to draw from.
And you've imprinted it in your energy body in the same way that things were imprinted in you in childhood. And you can switch some of that childhood imprinting into a more mature and spiritual imprinting if you work with it.
Yeah, that's true. And it's interesting, because when we showed up at the store this morning, and the only reason I went as early as I did wasn't to get toilet paper. It was because I was curious to know about the food. I wanted to see if there was any kind of produce available, or if there was any kind of meat available. you know, because I do have a family to feed for, you know, I basically buy a week to 2 weeks at a time just for regular stuff. So, you know, it was interesting because when we got there and we saw people hoarding, it reminded me, I'm old enough to remember when after 2000, you know, 9/11 happened and everybody was hoarding gas, or that was Katrina actually, when Katrina hit and all of a sudden gas prices were shooting through the, you know, through the ceiling and people were on lines sometimes at midnight getting gas, getting into fights and shooting each other. And then 2 weeks later, it was like all that for nothing. And we all got used to it. And the price was the same. And then the price started to go down again. And it was almost as though it had never happened. But it did happen. And, you know, after seeing how people reacted, I mean, listen, I was one of those people waiting to get the $4 gas because I was afraid it was going to go up to Great Britain prices, and they were paying at that time $10 for a liter of petrol. So, you know, we had that to think about. But nothing happened. And it got, you know, things got rocky, and then they leveled out. And I can't help but believe that we're going to have more of these tests. I think that this COVID-19 situation, and I also want to ask you, everyone in my house and everyone at my job since December have had some kind of a virus where we had fevers, we couldn't, a couple of us had trouble walking, but we've all recovered. My feeling is, we've already had, some of us have already had the COVID-19 and got over it.
Well, it's, you know, that's possible, certainly, although, you know, there's so much we don't know at this point. It could also be that on some level, you know, our bodies are, realize what is coming because, you know, really most of us do have a connection with the future, even if it's not conscious for us. We all have some kind of psychic ability. So many people were saying, well, you know, I just have this feeling that something's coming. And, you know, it really could be, I'm not an immunologist, so I don't know if this is correct or not. But then again, I don't think we really know a whole lot or enough about how the immune system works. But it could simply be that on some level, our bodies were going, oh, wow, I need to have make sure my immune system's in good working order. You know, maybe it was like a test run or something to activate the immune system just to remind it that it may be needed because, you know, we don't have any treatment. We don't have any vaccine. All we've got now is our immune systems. So...
And this is after years and years of antibiotic use, I'm sure you'll agree. And, you know, we used to run to the doctors at the drop of a hat and, you know, everything needed an antibiotic. And I think this is a spiritual test and I think it's a physical test. And I think we're going to be in for more of them.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a test. Now, the antibiotics are actually not effective against viruses. So, you know, what can easily happen too is that bacterial infections, which are effective against, you know, which are affected by antibiotics, can be secondary to viral infections. So you may get, for instance, if your lungs are weakened by flu or COVID-19 or whatever, then there may be a secondary infection of bacterial pneumonia. So, and if the doctors can't get the bacterial infection under control because the antibiotics are not effective, then it may be the bacteria that kills you, even if it was the virus that first infected you. Now there are, you know, things that work against viruses. It just happens we don't have anything that works against this specific virus. So, you know, it's and I think things like Katrina and all of the things that we've been through recently, what they have done is highlighted issues in our society that needed to be corrected, and we have not addressed them. And I think that this particular test is going to highlight issues of inequality in our civilizations, and hopefully we will address them. And astrologically, I think there's a good chance that we actually will address them. But the inequality of what's going to happen with this virus, with only people who have enough money being able to get tested or get into a hospital or support themselves while everything's in lockdown. I mean, there are people who live, you know, from paycheck to paycheck. And it's, a lot of people dismiss that as if, if they had been smart, they would have been saving stuff all these years instead of going paycheck to paycheck. Well, you can't do that if you're working for, $7 or $8 an hour or even $10 an hour in this economy. You can barely pay your bills. And so the level of inequality that we're dealing with in this society, I think that these tragedies and diseases serve to illuminate what we need to take care of as a civilization. And so far, I haven't seen us doing a great job.
I agree with you. We've not done a great job at all.
So hopefully, we'll start waking up a little bit more and realizing how much things have to change. But people are afraid of change. And so when things change all around you for reasons that you you really have no control over, and man, control is a big thing these days, then the change has already happened. That change has already happened. And so maybe people will be more willing to entertain positive changes in our society. I don't know. Some days I have more hope than others about this. But I also think that it's very important, and I talk about this in the book, for all of those of us who are spiritually inclined, for those of us who do work magic, for those of us who do meditate, I think it's important for every single person to put it out there as to what they want to see in the world. I mean, there's that old quote that I'm not even sure came from Gandhi, although it's always attributed to him, be the change you wish to see in the world. And I think that you have to know what change you want to see in the world. And then you need to stand up and say, at least on a magical level, this is what I want to have happen. This is the kind of world I want to see. Because if somebody's got to lead the way into a new world. And I think that even if you aren't out there on the podium making speeches, I think that every human being has their own personal vibration. And for magicians who work with this constantly, their vibration tends to be stronger and more effective than others. And it's like plucking a single string on a guitar. If you pluck a single string on a guitar, the other strings are going to start vibrating too. And it's the same thing with us as human beings. If we shift and change our vibration, then what we are putting out there may well help to alter the vibrations of others. And if we are standing strong in our spirituality, then we are less likely to be negatively impacted by the vibrations of others. So I think for each one of us, each individual, it's so important to do the work, to do the work that we can do, and not to feel helpless, because all of us can make some small change. Whatever changes we can make, even within ourselves, will help. If it's individuals are important. And so is the connection of us within the group. We affect each other. We are affected by each other. The whole concept of magic, of changing reality, it's not about, as you well know, it's not about waving your wand as though you were some Disney princess and having things sparkling appear in front of you, you know? It's about doing the work. And yeah.
Right.
Except we all have different ideas of what we want to appear in front of us. And yet,
exactly.
You know, this reality that we live in is about learning how to create reality together. Because we don't do it alone. We don't do it alone. And I believe that the universe is ultimately creative, and it's challenging us to create a society that we can live in joy and beauty and spiritual awareness, and every single individual contributes to that or not. You're always doing magic,
so
whether you are a magician or not.
Or not, yeah. So, you know, and it's just as well as doing the magic together and doing the work, you know, we also have to safeguard ourselves against the influences that don't want us to be successful. Because, of course, wherever you have positivity, you're also going to have the negativity. And we're getting a lot of that right now. We're getting very conflicting messages. We're getting a lot of anger. We're getting a lot of fear. And fear is, I think, more dangerous than anger on its own. Because people, when they're desperate, they do very desperate things. And we're seeing a lot of people, because there's no clear guidance from the top, as it were, you know, they're just out there floating, and it's, you know, it goes back to the base lizard brain, because that's where instinct comes from, just the instinct to survive, and it doesn't incorporate rational thought. And when you have somebody who's supposed to be leading you, confused, angry, lying, you know, just not being completely transparent, you don't really know what to believe. And at that point, I think, is when people become more afraid. And you can even see it in the stock market. The minute he opens his mouth, it drops. If he shuts up for like a day or two, it starts to pull back up a little bit. But the minute he says something, it crashes again. So you can see that people around the world are reading the energy of one person and taking that, because that's what we're using as representation, at least some of us, not me, but, you know, that is the person we've got out front speaking for us, and the energy that is being brought with that person is the complete antithesis to everything we want.
I agree, and I think, too, you're so right about fear being an issue, and we all get flung back into our lizard brains. But if we've been doing the work, if we've been doing the spiritual work, the magical work, if we've been thinking about what our beliefs are, if we've been experiencing the reality of those beliefs through meditation and magic, then we know on a very visceral level that is really even more primal than our lizard brain, because it is based in our soul, that we do have a soul, that and as does every other person in the universe and being in the universe, we all have souls that transcend this physical realm, that transcend time and space, and that we have creative power that we can use to shift and change the reality that we experience. Not like a Disney princess, but by doing the work and by working with others. And I think if you have that knowledge, if you have thought about where you come from and where you will go to when you die, then that does a lot to lessen the fear. This is the big problem I have, particularly evangelical Christianity, is the total focus on fear. On, well, you know, you're going to go to hell if you don't you know, if you don't measure up and do exactly what your priest tells you to do, because all that does is raise a lot of fear. Now, I know a lot of lovely Christians who, you know, feel that God is love and that's what Christ was here to preach, and that's a whole different way of looking at the world. But if you're living your life because you're afraid some vengeful God is going to throw you into hell if you don't do exactly what he and his representatives, and it's always a he, tell you to do, then mm-hmm. then you live in your base is fear. You come from a base of fear, and that doesn't help anybody. But that, you know, that's not only true of Christians, because if there are a lot of people who don't consider themselves Christian, but they have been brought up in a very fear-based Christian society, and they have not thought through what they believe. What they believe is true. They have not perhaps made that connection with their spiritual guides. I'm a polytheist, mm-hmm. so I work with the spirits of nature, and I work with spirits of you know, different levels of consciousness, because I am mm-hmm. literally in touch with all of these other guides and spirits. They reassure me that they're, you know, that about how to live my life. They help, because I believe that a number of spirits do have agency in the physical world. They help me, mm-hmm. they help guide my life and help things work out for me on the physical plane. And I really have managed to let go of most of the fear and anxiety that plagued me for so much of my life, because, you know, I too dealt with a hell of a lot of trauma in childhood and my teenage years and right into my 20s. And when you're constantly living in fear and anxiety, it's really hard to face serious situations like this without just, you know, falling back into your lizard brain and gibbering in fear. So I really think that it's important that we start to disentangle the underlying fear that seems to be so much of our society, that seems to underlie mm-hmm. so much of our psychological state, that we start unweaving and dismantling that fear and replace it with an understanding that we're here to create, and we have certain choices about what we create. And you know, mm-hmm. we can't change the entire landscape with a wave of our wand, but we can change our personal vibration. We can change the way we act in the world. And maybe we will have an influence on how other people act too. And hopefully we'll be able to start waking up as a species and working together towards creative solutions that give us lives of joy and beauty instead of fear and pain.
I agree. And I think this is the moment where, you know, leaders will and should emerge when you have this level of panic and fear, because mm-hmm. there's got to be a better way through. And I believe that there is. And I think this is the moment where people will step up and step into,
I hope so.
In a lot of cases, in a lot of cases, step into the power that they have been born to step into, and this is that moment.
Mm-hmm.
So I agree with you. I mean, I am hopeful, you know, but you never know. Again, you never know. But I'm very hopeful that we are going to come out of this, and this is, you know, as we come to these bumps in society, you know, we hit the bump and things get all crazy and then they level back down. But as you mentioned earlier, we've not seen any of the changes that were supposed to have been occurring each time these bumps happen. If anything,
mm-hmm.
I find that we're more divided, we're more isolated, and we're doing the absolute opposite of what we as a society are supposed to be doing. But
yeah.
there's going to come a point where it's either game over and congratulations, America was a great experiment, or the world was a great experiment, and now, you know, we're going to start from scratch and wipe off everything that's there right now because the game pieces are all dirty and we need to start over. That could happen too. But don't be, but that's not to instill fear. That's to say, let's mm-hmm. make those changes that we need to make. It's not all doom and gloom. Things can turn around, but we have to be willing as a society and as spiritual beings that we're going to do this together and we're going to make the changes that are necessary.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think it's important for people to step into their power as well, to step into their personal power as individuals, their power to influence reality. And, you know, there's, I think that's part about, and this is why I am so encouraging of learning and working with magic in the book. It reminds me mm-hmm. of, I think it was Anais Nin who said, and I may not quote this exactly right, but it was something like, the time came when the risk it took to flower was less than the risk it took to remain tightly furled in a bud.
Mm.
And I think we all need to start flowering into our own power to change the world, to influence the world, and to make the changes happen that we see in our visions.
I love it. Well, my lady, we are down to just under 4 minutes. So in the time we have remaining, please tell folks where they can see you, where they can get your book, and anything else you'd like to tell us.
Well, let's see. You can find me at www.uraniaswell.com. That's uraniaswell.com. Urania being the Greek goddess of astronomy and astrology. And mm-hmm. you can also find me on Facebook. There's a uraniaswell page on Facebook. And you can find my book pretty much at, as they say, all fine bookstores. Having once owned a bookstore myself before the days of Amazon, I always uh-huh. encourage people to buy my book if they can at their local metaphysical bookstore or witch store or whatever. But if not, it's available at all the usual online outlets as well. And it's called Touch the Earth, Kiss the Sky, Allowing the Rational Mind to Welcome Magic and Spirituality.
That's beautiful. And are you going to be hopefully appearing anywhere?
Well, you know, I was kind of hoping to plan some appearances and book signings and things, and I'm not sure what's going to happen at this point. You know, between the World Sacred Space, I was teaching there. That's going to cancel. I'm planning on going to Mystic South. I hope Mystic South will happen still. And, you know, mm-hmm. as the need to lock down diminishes and as we get the health situation in this country a little more under control, I'm hopeful that I can make, make some trips to bookstores and other venues to do book signings and classes and things like that. We'll see. We'll see how this all plays out.
We will indeed. Again, the book is Touch the Earth, Kiss the Sky. The author is Diotima Mantinea. Thank you again so much for being on, and we hope you'll come back.
Thank you so much, Raina. It was a pleasure talking to you, and I'm sure I'd
Same
be glad
here.
To come back anytime. All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you again. Bye-bye. All right, guys, we will see you on Friday with the fabulous Dorothy Morrison. Have a wonderful week. Stay safe. Bow to people. Don't touch them, okay? Talk to you soon. Bye.